Hello, it's Chuck from Above the Basement, Boston Music and Conversation. How would you like to join us in creating great conversations that inspire and connect? Patreon is a membership platform that provides a way for creators like us to build relationships and provide exclusive experiences to subscribers or patrons. We have been self-financed since we got off the ground in June of 2016, but in order to continue to fully invest all we can in each episode, we need your patronage. For more information, please go to patreon.com/AboveTheBasement. Internationally acclaimed soloist, composer, and educator, Wu Man is a master of the pipa, an instrument that dates back almost 2,000 years. Wu Man co-founded the Silk Road Project with Yo-Yo Ma and has collaborated with many illustrious composers, including Philip Glass, Tan Dunn, and Terry Riley, and has written for the Kronos Quartet. In 1998, she was awarded the Bunting Fellowship at Harvard University and was the first Chinese traditional musician to receive the United States Artist Fellowship in 2008. Wu Man was here as part of the Celebrity Series of Boston, who has been presenting the world's greatest performing artists since 1938. For more information about the rest of their performances, visit celebrityseries.org. We caught up with Wu Man on her tour with the Hawaiian Shadow Puppet Band at New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall and had a wonderful talk about Silk Road, the challenges of composing for different instruments, and her association with Boston. So here is our conversation with Wu Man, recorded at New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston, Massachusetts. Do you come visit Boston a lot?
I lived in Boston before.
For how long?
Since 92, probably more than 10, 92 to 2004.
Why Boston?
It's all my husband's work.
Oh, okay. And what does your husband do?
Chemist.
He's a chemist.
Is that weird?
No, it's not. Well, if you can be a chemist, that's Boston's a scientific city, so that's
a place. Yeah, but also California, you know, also, yeah. So that's why we moved to there.
So was he with a university or was he with a company?
Company.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
And that was your first... The first time you actually lived in the United States was Boston?
First city, New Haven.
New Haven, Connecticut?
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting, coming from China to New Haven, Connecticut.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I've only actually been to New Haven. I've only been to the train station there. So I've never
I was there a couple of months ago, November. It was great. New Haven just totally turned a different city.
Have you ever been to New Haven? You're right. You need a second to relax. You look like you're about to have a heart attack. Did you run? So she lived here for 10 years back in Boston because her husband is a chemist.
We lived in Arlington and then moved to Winchester.
Oh, Mo lives in Arlington?
Funny, we're all neighbors.
Yes.
Weird,
yes,
huh?
Yes.
Wait, and what about New Haven?
She stayed in New Haven for
first
a little bit.
City.
The first city.
After something happened with your connection to the BSO in the
80s.
1980, right?
Yeah.
You heard the BSO, visited China.
Yeah.
Was that a trigger for you to come over to the States?
Definitely, yeah. Definitely.
Who was the conductor at the time? Do you remember?
Seiji.
Oh,
Ozawa.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And I remember Seiji Ozawa visited my school conservatory in Beijing.
So you were in school at the time?
Yeah, I was middle school, high school, I forgot. And then all the film crew follow. It's like huge things in China.
I bet it was a big deal, right?
And then I think BSO played in stadium in Beijing. Symphony number 5, Symphony Beethoven number 5, number 9. That's all I heard. First time I heard live.
A live orchestra.
Orchestra. And people look differently. A Westerner.
Yeah.
That was the first time. Well, I'm like, wow.
Well, you know, when I saw that, it reminded me yesterday when I took my kids to see Alvin Ailey Dance Troupe here at the Box Center, the old Wang Center. And it's been a long time since I've seen real professional dancers, like these people, they're athletes and they're just their movement is, it just astounded me. And it had been so long since, I mean, I see my kids dance and they're beautiful when they dance, but seeing professionals do that on stage, it's a wow factor. It's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe how these people move and the talent and the professionalism that they have. When you had first heard the BSO in China as a kid, that must have been astounding for you, because the only orchestra you'd heard before was on a recording. Do you remember that moment when you first heard the orchestra?
Yeah, but even recording, it's old, you know, in school library you have to. It's not easy access to have listened to Western orchestra play, even we were in school.
Yeah.
So, and suddenly here is live. Well, I remember first reaction, I was sitting in the audience, it was, wow, such a power. How the sound like that.
Yeah.
Bam, 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 bam. Like, oh.
Yeah.
That was the first reaction. And secondly, wow, interesting, the conductor is Asian.
Really? That was something that struck you, huh?
That's another thing. Like, wow, you know, he's a Japanese.
Right.
How come he's Japanese and living in the U.S. and be a so well-known conductor?
And you're watching him in China.
Yeah.
Right, and you were just a kid at the time, too.
I was a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, so kind of, you know, this, as you mentioned, like trigger, bing, window kind of like opened.
It's interesting. You're right, it's the volume, the power, the piece itself, but also there's something about the visual.
Yeah, I think the mostly is because it's such a different music, not only sound, the color, and the way they communicated, it's just very different than Chinese traditional music. So we always, you know, small ensemble, solo, not with the huge people together. That's very different.
When you first heard that music, did you have a thought, possibly, that that's the way all Western classical music was?
Yes.
The reason I ask that is because you just mentioned in Chinese traditional classical music is small ensembles. But what I've been in my adulthood, I have really had more of an appreciation of small ensembles in the U.S. for the duos, the trio, the quartets.
Mm-hmm.
That must have been a learning process for you too.
Yeah, you know, it's totally opposite. The format is very different. We're more, you know, single line melody, sort of that kind of music, and how you treat, how you improvise around those notes. Huh. That's sort of we've been grew up with the Chinese music, basically like that. And then not a huge setting, you know, smaller, very kind of private. But suddenly you hear, you know, you see the hundreds of people on the stage. They have all kinds of instruments together and such a power. You know, although you hear from maybe movie or recording, but suddenly you hear the live people. It's really shocking.
Was it emotional for you?
Oh, very emotional.
Yeah.
And I remember when they played the American anthem.
Okay.
Star-Spangled Banner.
Yeah. And you know, everybody's clapping, started. So I was also feel like, wow, they can play national anthem in the concert.
Yeah.
Become a concert piece. That's also interesting.
So, well, you're appreciating it at a young age.
Yeah.
But it seems like you're always someone that was going to be thinking outside the box. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
Doing something in different ways. And bringing East and West together.
Yeah, I'm trying. I always very curiosity about things.
Yeah.
Even I was in school, I always tried to, you know, obviously for traditional repertoire, we say pipa solo piece, only probably 20 or 25. That's probably the most. When I was 9 or 12, already started the play. And then when I, in college, still play those 20 pieces, you know, back and forwards, you know, it's right, it's inside of me. But like, okay, what's next?
Right.
That's my question to myself. And then that's why I'm started out of the box and wanted to looking for something, some meaning of why I want to play pipa, why I want to be a musician. And then here is Boston Symphony. Wow, this is very different. And then later Isaac Stern came, like, wow, another soloist. So again, it's different.
Isaac Stern confirmed your suspicion and your curiosity.
Yeah.
Having another person come in was like, okay, I'm sold. Is that right?
Yeah, it is.
He
taught on the stage for the young violinist or my schoolmates. And he asked questions. He talk about what mean of musician, why you want to communicate on the stage with the audience. And I remember in the film, people ask, like, what's your job? He said, I don't have a job. I'm independent. Freelance. That was all I remember. All people just like shocking, like, what do you mean you're freelance? You no job? You not belong to any organization or school, or you just freelance. That word I never heard in China.
Was it more the word free?
Yeah, and, you know, what did that mean, freelance? That also kind of like, you know, for young student, young kid, want to be a musician, like, oh, there's another thing called freelance. You could do everything you want.
Yeah.
I take, like many Americans, take for granted my freedom. I think for the first time in my life, I heard that word freelance from you, and I forgot that there's a word free in it.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, that is interesting, but back to your looking at music from outside the box. One of the boxes that you were in, which I found fascinating, I had no idea this even existed, there's Chinese notation, which is numbers-based.
Right.
And then it has underlines and annotations to that. So you, when you started playing with Western musicians, you had to change your whole brain chemistry to talk that language. Now, can you read Western notation music?
Yes, I do, because I studied in conservatory, so they all have to learn the Western notation.
I see. So you're learning both in the school.
It's totally different system.
What is the system?
Well, in the older days, in the traditional, it's all tablature or something like that.
Sure.
There's no notation, basically. It's just tell you which string, which finger.
Okay.
So it's kind of very detailed written down. So you, the player, the musician, have to translate. The older days, I'm talking about maybe 1,000 years.
1,000. So we're talking about really old, the pipa right now.
Yeah. Everything. Yeah. Not only pipa, all the instrument.
All fingering is by the number.
Yeah.
So with your right hand, let's say if you took a stringed instrument, it's a number 4 hits a certain string at a certain time.
Yes, and for how long. And then your right hand, how you pluck or you tremolo, a lot of detail, basically just writing down everything.
Yeah.
And that's the old days, that kind of notation. But also, of course, later on in 19th century, so we have another notation, Chinese notation.
And it's still used today?
Some people still use. Old generation, like Beijing opera singer, they probably still use that notation. Again, there's a different process. And the number system you mentioned, Jeff,
yes.
I think it's 20th century notation we started.
Okay.
So number system. It's we all use number system as a Chinese notation.
And how about when you, certainly in Silk Road is a perfect example of combining different styles and cultures from around the world. Many traditions will use a Western standard of letters, A through G.
Mm-hmm.
How do you cross that language?
If I work with the Silk Road, mostly we have composed a piece. So there's already a composer right in the notation, or we arranged something from some folk tunes. So already there's a notation, but it's all Western notation.
So you have to translate.
I have to translate in my head. Yeah.
It's like another language. Obviously it is.
Yeah, obviously, so it's different.
You translate in your head, but you know, people say when you live in a different country for a couple of years, you start dreaming in that language. Is there any type of feeling you get after working with these musicians over time that you're not just dreaming, but you're feeling that Western notation as well? You could sit down and see a piece of music and say, okay, well, I can play that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very natural.
Yeah. That's the translation.
That's
immediate.
That's the translation. Yeah. You know, I play the Lou Harrison's Pure Concerto with a string orchestra. That's all Western notation. In my head, if I look at this music part, my parts, pipa parts, it's immediately just Western notation come out.
Right.
But if I go back to my solo traditional piece, Chinese notation, right away.
You're back to a 10-year-old.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you turn the water hot, cold, hot, cold. It's
right.
Like language. If I look at you speak English, so my mind is more English. But if I talk to Chinese, I turn totally the meaning, its sense of humor is totally different.
to the language part of music, I thought I read also that you wrote for the Kronos Quartet that you wrote.
Yes.
And they were the first people you've never written for another instrument.
Right.
Other than for the pipa.
Myself, yes.
So how did you approach that? Thinking you had to write for instruments, do you know how to play violin or do you know how to play any of those instruments a little bit? Or
yeah, I always take their violin just to kind of for a round have fun.
Yeah.
But
I bet you're really good at it though.
She just has fun with the violin.
I bet you are. I bet you're
but,
really
yeah. Since I moved to this country in 1990 and started playing with the Kronos Quartet, that's all the strings. And then, you know, later on, you know, Silk Road, Yo-Yo Ma, it's all strings.
Right.
So definitely, I would say, okay, I'm not brag, but I definitely expert on string.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine
any string player, if they play few notes, I will know this is good or bad. I mean, you know, the good player or so-so player.
What about writing for those instruments now?
So the style for that project of Kronos, they really encouraged me because when I work with them, mostly all contemporary pieces written by composers. So every time during rehearse, I always start criticizing the piece. Mm. I'm like, okay, this is, you know, they should have cut it. You know, this could be shorter. This ending could be so kind of like, okay. So they teasing me. It's like, okay, why don't you write?
Mm. Yeah. You think you're so smart.
Easy. Exactly. Yeah. Like you think you're, I said, you know, the whole structure should be this, that. So
not everything's like the pipa, woman.
So now you put your money where your mouth is. Now you're like, okay, I will.
Yeah. So I was really hesitant, but they said, oh, we wanted that. We wanted to younger string quartet player to learn different styles.
Yeah.
Not only European. So the whole process for me, I'm not sort of say composer, like a traditional way writing down the paper. So basically I just improvise on my pipa.
Yeah.
So I play the one line, have idea like, okay, I want to put four short different styles from different region of China.
Okay.
So like short stories. So I say four Chinese paintings. That's the piece.
Right, four Chinese paintings, right.
Yeah. So those pieces basically, you could play two. You could play only one as encore. You could play, you know, you can whatever you pair.
Yeah.
So that's the idea. Huh. And then I just went to studio. I play the one on the pipa, and I listen, and I added another layer, and then another one. So four. Yeah.
And the improv was over improv, and then you were able to translate that or transcribe that for the other musicians.
Yes,
in the
Kronos. Become a quartet piece. So four musicians.
Right.
So I play four times on the pipa. So the quartet piece actually could be four pipa or four other string, any other four. So it's very useful. We played in Taiwan with all Chinese traditional instrument like a pipa, liu qing, ruan.
You could play the same music just in different instruments.
Yes. Yeah.
The way that this comes out of your brain is just a different way than, let's say, you know, I don't know if Mozart sat down and played the piano, and then that was his improvised piece,
mm-hmm.
and then he transcribed it.
Right.
Or did he have a thought process? And I'm not as educated about the composers and how they did this, but I don't know if there was a combination of that. Did it come from the actual performance first, or did it come from the brain to the page first?
That's a good question. I don't know, because my experience is play first. I will get sense of how the music goes.
That's how Chuck and I play.
How the sound could be.
Because we can't write down a note to save our lives.
Yeah. I cannot do that without play. You know, sit down like, okay, what I'm doing.
So you're not hearing the music. If you're going
to
write,
I have
to play.
Yeah, to hear the music. Thank you.
The piece you just heard is from the Kronos Quartet 50 for the Future, the Kronos Learning Repertoire. They are commissioning a library of 50 works designed to guide young amateur and early career professional string quartets in developing and honing the skills required for the performance of 21st century repertoire. That piece is called Four Chinese Paintings, Gobi Desert at Sunset, and we'd like to thank them for use of this beautiful piece. Learn more at kronosquartet.org. Okay, now back to our conversation.
When you guys were talking about Kronos, is the Philip Glass connection seemed to be one of the key parts of your career, looking at the Western machine, in a sense, how the people could fit into that. And it's interesting because right here in Boston or Cambridge, you were at the ART.
Oh, yeah. You remember that?
So that was about 10.
Ron was there, I think.
10, 13 years ago?
At least.
When we talk to musicians that have been international or national, I mean, to have that Boston connection right here in New England is really special. We know that you had a Harvard connection as well as ART.
Yeah, Bunting Fellow, I was.
Right, the Bunting Fellow.
Yeah, 98.
Did you perform with Philip Glass's production?
Yes, that was the Song of the Voice.
Song of the Voice.
David Henry Hwang wrote the lyrics, the story. Yeah, I met Philip in Vienna when his symphony, I can't remember which one, the symphony was premiered with the Vienna Radio Symphony. That concert also have a pipa solo piece I played as a soloist. It was Dennis Russell Davis conduct, and he was in the audience sitting. And afterwards, he said, I'm going to write a piece for you.
Oh, very nice.
Philip said that.
Yes, Philip said, I really enjoy your playing, your artistry, but also the instrument. Sounded very interesting to me.
So when he wrote that for you, that was in Western notation.
Totally. All Western notation.
At that time, 13, 15 years ago, you were able at that time.
Philip said, well, I'm going to write, of course, Western notation in my style. I went to his apartment in New York, went there, and he sits on the piano, and I holding my instrument, pipa. I sit next to him, and he just plays some passages. He said, can you try on the pipa? So I tried. Oh, sounded good. That's how he started with. So the instrumentation, it was a small group. It was percussion, or the hand percussion, cello, flute, pipa. That's all.
Yeah. And you can really hear, just like in Silk Road, when you do a solo, you can hear the pipa come out and shine. And that's East-West right there.
Yeah, but also because Sound of a Voice, the story is a Japanese, old classical ghost story, but also popular in China too.
You know, it's funny, I saw this quote, and this could have come from me, a guy who saw you play for the first time. And he said, we kid ourselves when we think that we have at our fingertips access to all the music of the world, as well as the information about them. The fact is, I feel more, not less, ignorant about world music now than I did before the internet. All the doors that the internet opened about all these different kinds of music, it's like, well, now I'm smarter now than I ever was about world music. But no, all it really does is show us how ignorant we are about world music and how amazing it is. And Ron and I saw at the Sanders Theater, was it last year or was it even longer than that? We saw the Silk Road Ensemble. And seeing all these people from the different countries with their native instruments, which we've never seen before. Who was that gentleman? He had that weird small contraption.
Wutong.
Yeah.
Chinese instrument.
Yes. Shin?
Oh, the Shin. Yeah.
The Shin.
Yeah.
Such an amazing sounding instrument. Never seen it before in my life.
What's older, the Shin or the pipa?
Pipa older.
The fact that Silk Road is traveling the world and is very popular, and I mean, it was a full house. Everyone was so appreciative of it. It was a real beautiful thing to see all these people from all these different countries playing together as a community. It was something that brought all the communities together. That's what I love about Silk Road. I think it's an amazing, amazing ensemble.
Me too, and it brought together people from the actual Silk Road.
Right.
From Persia to
India, China. Yeah, some love from Central Asia.
So it's not just a metaphor for bringing people together on one stage in harmony and unity, but it physically brings its strings along the cultures.
Yeah, I think the idea started with a metaphor or something, but gradually it's been almost 20 years of Silk Road Project.
Right,
we all basically kind of like grown up together. It's great process to me because, as Chad, you mentioned, like maybe people here didn't know world music, but for me also, I didn't know more about what Western music, symphonies. So the whole process of that, basically we learn from each other, not only music but culturally. And the most interesting thing is during rehearsal or travel together on the bus. So we talk about a lot of different things. Food, that's more important. Yeah, so kind of like that's why you see on the stage those people together, so unique. They're so comfortable with each other on the stage. There's no awkward.
Looks like you're all having a blast up there. You're having a great time on the stage. I mean, it's, there's smiles all around.
I think we all appreciated each other. We learned, you know, I enjoyed going to India. I enjoyed going to Turkey or, you know, so kind of they enjoy coming to China.
How about the languages themselves? Do you all speak English? Do you all speak to each other in English? Are there other dialects? Are there other side conversations with people that only they can speak to each other?
Oh, yeah. In the beginning, many languages going on.
Right.
Many Russians, you know, a lot of Central Asians, they speak Russians, you know, and Chinese.
Right.
Okay, so if we bring a piece from China, a Chinese piece, and the whole band will listen to I give idea. I will sing to them, like how we sing it. If I sing this kind of style, you know, so fiddle player, violin, so they can imitate my sound.
Right.
So that's not not like that, you know, there's no vibrato or something. Actually, each, like if we play Persian music, Kayhan will come up and say, you know, how the style should be. So that's the whole process. That's very interesting. So actually, all the members, we know if we want to play gypsy piece on the pipa, it's like so damn difficult, you know, all the rhythm, all those things, because the Chinese never always in 4-4 or 2-4, we never have like 15-16 or 18-21. Like, what is this?
18-21,
So the percussionist, you know, they play in, you know, Brazil, and they have a lot of different rhythms. So I'm just go them to teach. They will teach me.
Does it work with the reverse, where you have, let's say, someone will come up with a line or a melody or a rhythm, but the other cultures will Chinesify that or Indianify that, where other cultures will actually create something different based on that initial melody?
With some pieces like that,
where you collaborate on something.
Yeah, if I play Syrian, the guy give us his piece, Wedding, and all the rhythms change, but he wants me to play on that. So I will add my elements, but sometimes I bring Chinese flavor.
So it's not only the Wu Man element of your own instrument, but it's a Chinese flavor as well.
Yeah, so it becomes something different.
What has been the most surprising thing that you've noticed when you bring Silk Road to a different city? Like when you first founded Silk Road, how has it changed from the very beginning, which is now 20 years, you said?
Yeah, 98.
Yeah, so I mean, that's a long time. And certainly a lot has happened in 20 years. But from the very beginning to where it is now, how do you think that's changed? I know it's kind of that's
a
tough question.
Well, I think the very beginning, for me, I kind of still shy and young from China and kind of willing to learn something, you know, open eye, kind of curiosity, that's what I said, and excited to join the group. But through almost 20 years, I feel very calm. I feel I know something now, deeper than it used to be. And I can have my own band. I can decide what concert I wanted to, what kind of art direction I wanted to. Like right now, I bring Chinese shadow puppet band from Village. So this is my decision. I want to do it. I couldn't imagine 20 years ago I will be that brave to have that idea. Definitely not.
So this part of the Silk Road project and ensemble that brings that out in people, not just time and experience.
Yeah, it's not only experience of music, but culturally and your life decision. Because we travel a lot of places, many countries. I feel like definitely, of course, age, you know, getting older, but kind of getting much mature. Used to be just a student, just player. Now I want to be, I want to be musician.
I love how you use the word calm in there, though.
Confidence as well.
Calm and confidence, right.
But calm is not something that you necessarily kind of associate.
Well, I think I know what you're saying. It's not the word that I think we always think about striving for, but we probably should. Calm doesn't mean you have to be successful or even confident. It's peace.
Right. It is peace.
I mean, I would imagine you didn't start Silk Road because, you wanted to feel that calm.
It was a Silk Road effect.
How would you even...
There's the Silk Road project, the Silk Road ensemble, and there's the Silk Road effect.
Which is calmness.
Which is calmness.
Which I just think sense? That's I just think that's fascinating.
Of course, it makes sense.
I think I'm
it does though.
Now I'm turning on into the Chinese mind. That's why I use that word.
Yeah, you know what? We could all use a little bit of Chinese mind.
All right.
It's that. I think it's more of that right brain too. That I'm going to use the word Zen, which is not Chinese.
Oh yes, Zen.
But very meditative.
Yeah.
But it's also the fact that you're bringing in all these different people from different countries and different backgrounds, and they're coming from a different place musically. Calmness doesn't seem like a word that would come out of that. It would almost seem more confusing or
frenetic,
just too much coming at me. But the magic of all that happening was that it did. I don't mean to keep on harping on the word calm, but
the music is not necessarily calm.
No,
but the effect
right.
on, if I may, Wu Man,
yes. Yes.
and maybe other people in Silk Road is that there's a sense of confidence and calmness. For you to be able to be a leader in the Haiyuan puppet.
Huayin Shadow Puppet Band.
Help me out with the pronunciation.
Huayin.
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 Shadow Puppet Band. That's why we're here today, too.
Yes.
Is we're going to see some critically acclaimed, awesome combination of pipa, your writing, your style, as well as the Huayin Shadow Puppet Band.
Yes.
And that's right at right here at Jordan Hall. We're really excited because we get to see this at what, 3 o'clock today?
Yes. 4. Or 3 o'clock?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Chuck's going to come at 4.
I'm going
to
come
be there at
4.
At 3. And we know you have to do a sound check soon, so we want to be, you know, we make sure your time is okay. But maybe before we settle in or we conclude and get more calmness in our life.
Yes. We need more calmness.
We can, we'd love to hear a little bit of thoughts about how this journey began with the Huayin Shadow Puppet Band.
So I met them 2007 when I back to China in a village, small village. The reason I went back to China because it was Carnegie Hall putting out Chinese music festival in 2009. But they asked me to curate in two Chinese traditional music concerts. So that started me to think, okay, what kind of Chinese music I want to bring to the U.S. to share with audiences. So mostly we hear it's all city music, urban music we know, mostly popular in U.S. Small ensemble, you know, tea house music, kind of Cantonese music. So I said, something missing, because Chinese, in the northern part of China, there's so dramatic, like a gypsy kind of type, like a rock and roll type of music. I want to bring that.
In the northern part of China.
Northern part of China. So I want
to
bring
that. It's
got
more of an edge to it?
Yes.
A little bit of
rock.
You'd use the analogy of rock.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to rock, is basically what you're saying.
Okay. Exactly.
Because there's a time in our lives that we all just need to sit back and say we want to rock.
Yeah, I want to rock, but I want to share that rock with
understand.
You guys.
Yeah.
So I brought them to Carnegie Hall. That was the first time in 2009. So this time after that, I say, okay, this is time I wanted to plan for a tour in the U.S.
This is the same gentleman who were in the documentary about Silk
yes.
Road? Okay, I knew I'd seen
the Music
them.
Strangers, the whole band was in the documentary.
And they are all awesome characters.
Yes.
They're funny. They just seem like lovely people to begin with.
So there are
the rock stars, Chuck.
The rock stars. Yeah. They, you know, like they're farmers. They're all farmers. And this music and the shadow puppet tradition is their family tradition. You know, in the daytime, they just go to, they really have their own land to plant corn and cotton, pepper. Mainly, that's what they do. But
that's their
music,
day job.
Yeah, but musically, it's because of the family tradition. So they were hired by the village, you know, weddings, funerals.
Right.
Sort of.
And now they freelance and go to Carnegie Hall.
Exactly. Now they're in Jordan Hall.
And Wu Man, I mean, you're bringing this northern China gypsy, what you call sort of a rock group of people that the world has really not heard. For you to tour and to bring this to people's lives, what are the conversations you have with those performers and those men on stage? How do they feel about this?
They're smiling every day. They ask me, what's next? Where are we going? When we're on a bus tour, they see the landscape very different. And when they see the audience in the concert hall afterwards, they're all standing ovation. They just couldn't believe.
Still can't believe?
Still can't believe.
The first one must have been incredible.
They're very shy in some way, but on the stage, they're just 100% out there. That moved me very much. I see them, music is real, very real. It's not nothing polished. That's I wanted to share with the audiences.
Well, we can't wait to see it. We're honored to be here sitting with you and to explore it with you, and it's going to be great.
I'm excited just to hear you do the sound check.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much for talking with us. We really appreciate it. And have a great day today at Jordan Hall. Where are you going next?
China.
Back to China.
Yeah.
We'll have a safe trip back there.
You know what I say that to the kids, what they call Chinese food in China? Food.
This is a stupid joke.
Food?
Yeah.
God, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry you had to hear that joke. Let me apologize on the behalf
okay.
of all Americans. We are much funnier than that.
How do we say thank you so much in Chinese?
谢谢.
谢谢.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
The piece you just heard was from the Huayin Shadow Puppet Band, and we were fortunate enough to catch the show that afternoon, and it was fantastic. We had a wonderful time talking with Wu Man, and we'd like to thank her and all the kind folks at Celebrity Series of Boston for their assistance in setting this up. Again, for more information about the Celebrity Series and upcoming performances, go to celebrityseries.org. You can find out where Wu Man is playing next and learn more about her at wumanpipa.org. That's WUMANPIPA. Go to AboveTheBasement.com, where you can join us on Patreon, sign up for our newsletter, listen and subscribe to our podcast, like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, and look at all the nice pictures we post on Instagram. We are everywhere. On behalf of Ronnie and myself, thanks for listening. Tell your friends, and remember, Boston music, like its history, is unique.